Welcome to the Anxiety Summit Season 2. This is right near the end of the series. We're wrapping up the summit with an interview on food because I don't want you to forget about the importance of going back to the basics of eating real whole food. You've heard a lot of very in-depth topics, a lot of complicated topics, but we've really got to go back to the basics of eating real whole food. I'm Trudy Scott. You probably know me by now. You've heard me every single interview. I'm a food mood expert, certified nutritionist, and author of the Anti-Anxiety Food Solution. And I just want to give you that introduction again in case you've jumped in and signed up right near the end. But our topic today is primal nutrition for anxiety and depression. And our expert today is Dr. Lauren Noel, and she is fondly known as Dr. Lo. Welcome, Dr. Lo.
Thank you. So great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's really nice to be interviewing you. I really appreciate the interview that you did on the amino acids for me, and it's just great to have you so I can pick your brain about all this wonderful food that we need to incorporate into our daily living.
Well, I love that this is something that we're talking about because I know for a lot of your listeners, they're probably going, oh my gosh, there's so many things that I can do, right? There's all these different amino acids. There's different kinds of, you know, maybe herbs or supplements or, you know, neurotransmitters. It's just, it can be a lot. And so it's easy to get shiny object syndrome where you get pulled in one direction and try a bunch of different things. But even for my most complicated cases in the clinic, I always have to start with the basics. I have to make sure that the patients are eating real food, that their digestion is working, that they're actually absorbing their nutrients, because that's the base. You know, I don't care if someone has, you know, Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or, you know, autoimmune diseases. I mean, different diagnoses. If they're not eating real food and getting those good nutrients absorbed, then we're not going to have much success. So no matter how healthy you are or how sick you might be, it has to be addressed. So this is a very important topic.
It is. It really is. So let me read your bio, and then we'll go right into some of these topics that we're going to talk about today. Dr. Lauren Noel is the owner and medical director of Shine Natural Medicine in Solana Beach, California. She received her doctorate in naturopathic medicine from National College of Natural Medicine in Portland, Oregon. Since 2010, Dr. Noel has treated over 5,000 patients using natural therapies. Her area of expertise are digestive disorders, thyroid and hormone imbalances, and primal nutrition. She has been a frequent guest lecturer on health radio shows and medical conferences, and she is the host of Dr. Lo Radio, a top-rated podcast on iTunes that has attracted over 1 million listens. Dr. Noel treats patients locally in the San Diego area and all throughout the U.S., and you can learn more at drlaurennoel.com. And I first became acquainted with Dr. Lo through a nutrition group that I'm part of, and then also she interviewed me on Dr. Lo Radio, and I highly recommend Dr. Lo Radio. Great experts that she interviews and a great resource for your continued learning, because as I'm hearing from people who are attending the summit, this is a lot of information to gather and absorb and take in what you can, implement what you can, and don't feel overwhelmed, because I know a lot of people are feeling a little bit overwhelmed by everything that's coming at them, which is why I wanted to wrap this up with a talk on primal nutrition and food, because as Dr. Lo says, it's really important to get back to the basics of not just eating real food, but being able to absorb the beautiful nutrients from those foods that you are going to eat. So we're going to start by talking about red meat. Before we go there, I just want to share a little bit about the context of this, because I talk about it a lot when I'm doing my presentations. I've written about it in my book, and it's a big part of my programs is helping people to, you know that red meat is healthy. Obviously, quality is really important, and we'll talk about that in a second. But Dr. Felice Jacka was the co-author of one of my favorite studies, and I actually interviewed her in season one of the Anxiety Summit, and we discussed the results of her PhD paper, which was published in the American Journal of Psychiatry in 2010. So this is a mainstream journal, and the title was Association of Western and Traditional Diets with Depression and Anxiety in Women. And this study was actually published on the front cover of the journal with a big editorial, and it was nominated as the most important study of 2010 in psychiatry research. And it was considered really, really big news in psychiatry. And what the premise is of the study is that a traditional dietary pattern characterized by vegetables, fruit, fish, did actually include whole grains, and red meat was associated with a lower odds for major depression or anxiety disorders. And they were saying that the Western diet of, you know, comprising processed foods, fried foods, refined grains, sugary products, was associated with a higher odds of mood disorders. And what she shared in our interview was that one of the hypotheses that she had going into this PhD research was that this increased intake of animal foods would be toxic and would actually be associated with more mental disorders. But it didn't turn out. And in, what she said is, in our study, out of every single dietary food grouping that I looked at, including vegetables, fruit, salads, beans, the strongest correlate of mental health was red meat intake. And, of course, she was talking about grass-fed red meat. A lot of, most of the meat in Australia is grass-fed. And what she found, that this was very high correlation, especially in women, and that women who have less than the recommended intake of red meat seem to be an increased risk for common mental disorders like anxiety and depression and even bipolar disorder. So these are pretty profound results, especially in this day and age where people are being cautioned not to eat red meat. I'm sure you hear people saying that all the time, Dr. Lowe. You know, I'm healthy, I'm not eating red meat anymore. Can you talk a little bit about why we want to be including red meat? What are some of the beautiful health benefits that we're getting from eating red meat?
Yeah, for sure. That's a fascinating study, and I'm so glad that they conducted that. It's just really, I think, the results I see all the time in the clinic, but isn't always reflected in research, so it's nice to have something like that published. So looking at the area of mental health, and this is an area hugely important to me. It's something I struggle with myself for years, and something I see a lot in the clinic. My actual background of passion was actually studying psychology and how it relates to nutrition. So I studied this quite a bit, and there are just so many different nutrients that you're not going to find in plant food specifically. Now, I'm a huge fan of plants, and obviously they're very important and they're loaded with many nutrients, but there are some really key essential nutrients that you're not going to find in plant foods. So a few of those, number one is obviously B12. It's something that's a very common deficiency for, you know, vegans or vegetarians. You don't find it in any plant foods. It is specifically found in animal foods. It's in a high amount in red meat. So that's one right off the bat. And we know that B12 is necessary to make certain neurotransmitters. We know it's necessary for energy. So hugely important for the brain, for neurological tissue. And you're, you know, again, it's the highest in red meat. Iron, hugely important too. It's especially for women who are having periods. You're having a regular cycle, so you're going to be releasing blood that contains iron, so more at risk for having anemia. I see anemia all the time. It's so common that I'm seeing this with patients, and they're tired and they're depressed, and so the iron levels can become a lot higher if you're obviously eating red meat. Those are two in particular that are very important for mental health. There's other things too, like if you're having grass-fed red meat versus regular, you know, conventionally raised cows, it's a very different kind of fat. So I know you talk about this a lot in your book, which I love your book, talk a lot about the important kinds of fat. So omega-3 fats, you're actually going to see a higher ratio of those in grass-fed meat than in conventionally raised cows that are eating corn. So omega-3s are very important for mitigating inflammation. We know inflammation is correlated with depression, and so those healthy fats are a lot higher in grass-fed red meat than the corn-fed. So those are three very important nutrients for brain health and anxiety and depression.
Great. And I'm glad you mentioned the iron, because that's a very common deficiency I see often. Can you just tell us what sort of tests that you like to do to, you know, figure out someone has anemia? Because often we may not, you know, we may go to the doctor and not get all the testing that we might need to get done.
Sure. Yeah. So there's a few things you'd want to ask from your doctor. One is you want to get a red blood cell count, because when you're low in iron, you can have a lower amount of actual red blood cells. You also want to ask for hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is the oxygen-carrying part of the red blood cells, and those are connected with iron because the oxygen is actually attached to the iron within the red blood cells. So if you're low in iron, you're going to have low oxygen, and that's going to be part of the fatigue. So if you have low oxygen, you have low energy. Oxygen is what energizes the body. And you're also going to want to ask for a hematocrit. Hematocrit is the percentage of your total blood that's made up of red blood cells. And so if you're low in iron, you can also be low in the hematocrit. So those three things, most doctors run if they just run a CBC, which is just a complete blood count. They usually check for that. The other one you want to check for, so a couple other things, you want to look for serum iron, and you also want to look for ferritin. Ferritin is the storage of iron. So most of the iron is actually stored in the liver, and so that is an important one to check for. So if any of those are low, then that can be a pretty good clue that you're deficient in iron.
And what is your ideal ferritin level that you like to see?
Great question, because most of the lab ranges are a very, very wide range, and you can be within the normal, quote-unquote normal range, and still be deficient. So I like to see ferritin about a 70. I think that's the range where most women feel the best. And, you know, again, I mean, I'll see it as low as 7 sometimes. I think that was the lowest, or even a 5 I've seen. So very common deficiency.
Yep, you're absolutely right. Very common. And I'm glad you mentioned 70. I interviewed Dr. Isabella Wentz in Series 1 of the Summit, and she said that that was a good number for optimal thyroid function as well. So
absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. The iron is required for the conversion of T4 into T3. So T3 is the active form of the thyroid hormone, and that's the one that does all the work. It helps with energy, with mood, with metabolism, with your period, you know, a huge connection with mental health and with the thyroid. So without that iron, you're not able to activate those actual thyroid hormones. You just have those symptoms of a low thyroid, and depression and anxiety can definitely come along with that.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned the tie-in with mood, but iron is a very important cofactor for making serotonin and our other neurotransmitters, correct?
Yep, you're absolutely right. Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is, right, instead of getting the shiny object syndrome and going, oh, okay, I need to take iron, or I need to take, you know, these B vitamins specifically, it's like, okay, well, you can get the blend of all these nutrients in, you know, a traditional kind of diet, foods that were really designed to eat. So, it's very complex biochemistry, but instead of getting so sucked up in the specifics, it's like starting with a real food diet is going to give you a really good base of all those different nutrients in the synergies and the way that they're meant to interact with each other.
Yes, good point. And why I'm taking a little dive into the iron is because it is such a common deficiency. And then we do have, people who are choosing not to eat red meat. And sometimes doing the testing and seeing that you are low in some of these nutrients can be the impetus to say, well, maybe I need to change. Mm-hmm. We actually had someone on the Facebook section of the summit saying, I've been mostly vegetarian. I've improved a little bit. And then from the summit and her naturopath and advice from friends, I'm reconsidering eating meat, but I'm having a hard time because I'm worried about certain environmental repercussions and studies showing that meat's bad for you. And, you know, what should I do? And then someone actually responded saying, and I got permission, you know, to share this in this interview, but she responded saying, vegetarianism didn't work out for me, and over 6 years of not eating meat and fish, I developed cognitive impairment, neuropathy in my hands and feet. She thought she had MS, and she says, it turns out I needed to eat red meat. And the essential fatty acids from the fish and the meat repaired her, you know, myelin degeneration, and she started to eat the meat and fish, and then 3 months later she was doing a lot better. So, and she says, eating grass-fed meat was a godsend for me. So we have a lot of people in that situation where they think they're doing, you know, a healthy thing for themselves, and it's not. And, you know, I say this with a lot of compassion, because when you are, you know, you're eating the way you feel like you should be for a humane reason, it's very difficult to change. So doing some of this testing and seeing, you know, where you are can be helpful. Can you just talk a little bit about how you guide someone who is a vegetarian and who may be thinking that maybe they should be incorporating some animal protein into their diet?
Yeah. Well, one easy at-home thing you can do to right now see if you might be low in iron, there's some easy things you can try at home just to see if there's some clues on your body that this could be going on. So one thing is you can look in the mirror and you want to just gently pull down on the skin that's below your eyes and look at the kind of the inner part of the lower lid. If you find that tissue, it's called the conjunctiva, if you find that that's a real, real pale color pink, it should be just a nice you know, kind of moderate dark pink color. If it's real light, that can be a clue that you have low iron. Also, if you look at the palms of your hands, if you find that, that there's just real what they call pallor, it's a light color on the palms of your hands, then that can be a clue. And the other one is if when you push on your fingernails, I'm going to hold for a few seconds and then release, it should go from a light color to pink right away. There shouldn't be a delay to it. So if you do that and you see that it takes a while for those, it's called capillary refill. So if you find that that takes a long time to turn pink again, that's also a really good clue that you could be low in iron. The other one is if you find yourself yawning a lot. So if you are yawning all the time, maybe you do a hard workout and you find yourself yawning, that's because your body is desperately needing more oxygen, potentially because you have low iron. So if you're a vegetarian and those are a few things you're doing and you're seeing that you're getting those potential positive results, then you want to get some lab testing and look and see what your levels look like. But and it's really dependent on everyone. I've seen vegetarians that were not anemic. So you're not always anemic, but most of the time for people who are anemic, they tend to be pretty low in B12. Low in iron. Or low in red meat is what I'm saying. So people who tend to be vegetarian tend to be low in iron. So you want to start to add in more of that into the diet. It may not sit so well digestion-wise just because your body isn't used to making, you know, the necessary amount of stomach acid or enzymes. It'll take a little while to get used to that. So you want to start really low and work your way up. I was vegetarian for 3 years, so I know from experience with this, I jumped in and had a full-on steak, and I, you know, actually, it felt a little heavy in my stomach, but I got to tell you, I felt better, so...
Yeah, I was a vegetarian for about 3 years as well, and I started eating salmon first. Mm-hmm. And really, I really believed that I would never have chicken or meat again. I just thought, I'm never going to do this. And it really affected my health. And I started with salmon, and then I added chicken, and then I added red meat. And I didn't have any issues with digestion. So as you say, everyone is different. But I know I felt a lot better eating animal protein. And I find a lot of people come to me, they're trying. They're trying their best to be healthy, and it's not working for them. Can you talk a little bit about, what about cancer? What about heart disease? This woman on the Facebook group said, what about, you know, the environment? What about all these things that we hear about, why we shouldn't be eating red meat?
Yeah, it's something that there's been so much flack in the media about this, and there's no studies that show an association with cancer with red meat. They're actually conducting it with grass-fed, healthy cows. Cancer is a relatively new disease. We've been eating red meat for thousands of years. So how is a new disease is associated with an old food? It doesn't make any sense. And the difference is the quality of the meat is night and day. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a completely different animal, what we're having now in American culture and a lot of the, European ones now. I mean, it's just not the same quality. If you go to other countries, it's totally different. I went to Iceland recently a few months ago, and all of their meat is grass-fed. They don't have any corn-fed meat, and it's just regular cows. I mean, they just don't have it. Go down to Costa Rica, same thing. It's all grass-fed meat. So those cows are continually eating that chlorophyll, and it's making the meat so much different than the cows that we're having now. I mean, cows now are loaded with, pesticides and antibiotics and hormones. So it's just a completely different animal, and it's, so much of it is toxic. So I think there's a real concern if you're having conventionally raised meat. I think that if that's the only kind of meat you have access to, don't eat it. It's better, in my opinion, it's better to be a vegetarian than to eat conventionally raised meat. Now, there really is no excuse to not get healthy meat. You can get it even online and have it delivered to you. So you can make it work even if you're not near near a farm in your area. So night and day difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people will say, well, it's a lot more expensive, but you don't need a whole lot. You just need a small amount. And I'd like to talk a little bit about, portion sizes and quantity, because a lot of people think, oh, how am I going to be able to afford it? And I always like to say your plate should have a mountain of vegetables and a small serving of meat or some sort of animal protein. So let's talk a little bit about what do you recommend in terms of portion sizes and how often?
Yeah, it's a great question. Everybody's really different on what you're going to need. So because I'm a clinician, I do a lot of lab testing to see what people are needing. So if I do blood work for a patient and, her ferritin is at, 10 or 20 and she's feeling really tired and I ask, well, how often are you having red meat? And she says, okay, I'm having it once a week. And I'll say, okay, you need to have it 3 times a week. So I'll increase it based on that. If she says I'm having it once a month, then okay, let's have you do it once a week. So it depends on what someone's actually doing. So it really depends on the patient and what her levels look like. I know for most of my female patients, having them eat red meat a couple times a week is what I would generally recommend. If you do have heavy periods, having more, or after your periods, having more. So just depends on what your hormones are looking like, you know, what symptoms you might have. So it's very individualized. You know, there's not one cookie cutter kind of answer for that.
Okay. And just going back to the study that I mentioned with Dr. Felice Jacker, what they came up with was that women need about a palm-sized serving 3 or 4 times a week, which is, mm-hmm. sounds pretty similar to what you're recommending. And I'm not adverse to someone having red meat every day. Would you say that that's a problem?
Most people, it's not a problem. There are a subset of people who they tend to do better with less saturated fat. So if we're running, and that's a specific genetic test, we run ApoE testing on them to see if they're, some people really store fat and turn it into cholesterol, but most people, that's not the case. So, you know, we can do cardiovascular testing and see, but even like stearic acid, for example, that's the you know, one of the fatty acids that's found in grass-fed red meat, it's not shown to have effects on blood cholesterol. So even someone who has, you know, tendency, maybe a family history of high cholesterol, grass-fed red meat, we just don't see that so much of a concern.
Good. I'm glad you mentioned the cholesterol issue because a lot of people are very worried about it, and a lot of women will come and work with me and say, well, we're not eating red meat because my husband's got heart disease, and when they hear that yes, they can in fact incorporate red meat back into their diets, they're very pleased, and she says, oh, my husband's going to absolutely love you because
right
because it's as you said, it's we've been eating this way for thousands and thousands of years, and we just need to go back to focusing on the good quality, which is so important.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is conjugated linoleic acid.
Mm-hmm.
That's an anti-cancer antioxidant. That's found, it's 3 to 6 times more in grass-fed meat than in conventionally raised meat. So it actually is more anti-cancer having the good quality kind.
Great. And then the other thing is that you talked about was the fact that corn-fed cows are eating corn, and the issue with that is that we're getting very high levels of the omega-6, which is pro-inflammatory.
Exactly. Yes. Most Americans are about 20 to 1. They're having 20 times more omega-6s to omega-3 fats. And that's setting you up to have inflammation throughout the body. Inflammation is really the common denominator in so many of our diseases of Western civilization, like heart disease and cancer and diabetes. So really reducing inflammation is key in preventing all of these different diseases. These diseases are very preventable. It's just our Western lifestyle is really setting us up to have this very commonly. So moving that more into the direction of 2 to 1, 3 to 1, where you're doing, you know, a lot more of the omega-3s, it's going to have you a lot less inflamed. And patients feel it, too. You get more fish oil in your diet, you feel less inflamed. Joint pain goes down. You just feel less inflamed. You can tell when there's inflammation.
Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing all this research connecting depression and anxiety to inflammation as well. So mm-hmm. we're now seeing that, as you say, that inflammation is causing all these lifestyle diseases, but there's a big tie-in to mood as well. So if it's affecting our heart and our risk of arthritis, why wouldn't it affect our mental health as well?
Absolutely. Yep, it's all connected.
Now, I just wanted to mention one other nutrient, which is one of my favorite nutrients, and I'm sure it's, you know, on your list as well, and that is zinc, because women are not only women, but everyone is commonly deficient in zinc, depleted by sugar consumption and stress and exercise, and red meat is a great source of zinc as well, and it's an important cofactor for making the neurotransmitters, and of course when it comes to someone with pyroluria, the social anxiety condition, zinc is key for helping to balance out the copper levels, which could be causing anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Zinc is one of the most common deficiencies I see in my practice, and you know, across the board for men and for women. But I think this is a real concern. One of the little clues you can do at home to see if maybe this is an issue, if you have white spots on your fingernails, that can be a clue you have zinc, or if you have vertical ridges on your fingernails. So you take a look at those. I know a lot of us women, we have our nails painted, but if you don't, then you can take a look and see if that's something going on. But zinc, like you said, very important for things like pyroluria to make GABA. That's a cofactor for that. It's also required to make thyroid hormones. So low zinc, you can get some low thyroid symptoms with that. So, and one of the best food sources besides red meat is also oysters. So I prescribe oysters often for people. Do you like oysters?
I love oysters.
I do too. I don't know if you were saying it like, ew, like gross. I love oysters. I think they're so good. A bit of an acquired taste. I didn't like them when I first tried them. They're kind of slimy. But if you doctor them up right, it's a little lemon, a little bit of a cocktail sauce, some hot sauce. So good and loaded with zinc. They're about 10 times higher than most of the other foods. So, you know, a couple times a week having some oysters, and it's an aphrodisiac, so that is always good for mood as well.
Yes. And I love that you say you prescribe oysters. What a wonderful thing to do a prescription for food.
Yeah, not your typical prescription from your doctor, I know. I don't usually write in a prescription pad. That would be funny.
I know, but that would be a good idea. I love it. And I love how you've got these little tips that we can use to figure out if we may be deficient. This tip for the zinc and then the iron tips were fantastic. The one about the fingernail, I'd heard that long ago, but I had forgotten about that one. So that's a really good one. I'm sure everyone was sitting doing it as you were talking.
I know. Right, totally.
Excellent.
It's handy.
Okay, great. Well, let's just think about anything else you want to talk about animal protein. You kind of mentioned oysters. Obviously, wild fish is going to be a good source. Eggs are going to be a good source.
Yeah, and I think just like specifically protein, I mean, amino acids are so much easily absorbed from animal sources than things like, you know, if you're doing mainly plant proteins, because those amino acids are the building blocks. And I know you probably talk about this on your show, but they're the building blocks to make your neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are deficient in protein, then you're not going to have the building blocks to make your neurotransmitters like serotonin, like GABA, you know, like dopamine. You need the proteins in order to do that. So you can't have a healthy mood without the building blocks to make the healthy mood neurotransmitters, and that's number one. And the other one is balancing your blood sugar. If you're low in protein, your blood sugar is probably doing a bit of a roller coaster. You're probably getting crashes. You know, if you skip a meal, feel like you're foggy-headed, you want to wring someone's neck, I mean, that's a clue. Your blood sugar is probably dropping, and protein is one of the very best ways to balance that, and also the healthy fats, too. So a traditional, more of a, you know, paleo kind of diet is going to give you those building blocks to do that. So that's another reason why it's so good for mood. I mean, we've all felt it. Low blood sugar, we want to hurt someone. So get your blood sugar balanced, and you're feeling mood-wise so much more balanced.
Yes, and then that goes back to the whole thing about breakfast is making sure to include some good quality protein at breakfast. Really important.
Oh, huge. I think if everyone listening, if you walk away with one thing, have breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Such a simple thing, but have breakfast with some protein. It sets your whole day in a whole different metabolic way. If you're skipping breakfast, you're already going into that fight or flight stress response, and you're just behind for the day. So start it with breakfast with protein. Very, very important for your mood.
Good. And we've heard this theme throughout the summit, people saying this, and it's just so important. And as you say, take one thing away and do that, and you will notice a difference, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So before we go into healthy fats, I'd like to just talk about digestion, because we could be eating this beautiful grass-fed red meat or the oysters, and we may have a problem digesting it, and then we're not going to take this beautiful protein and break it down into the amino acids and all these amazing nutrients like zinc and iron and B12. So tell us a little bit about digestion and what we need to think about in terms of maybe if we aren't digesting and what we could do to improve digestion.
Sure. Well, each of those nutrients you mentioned, B12, iron, and zinc, those three require stomach acid. So some nutrients are more easily absorbed, but things like those three nutrients really do need enough stomach acid. So, and I'm sure you see this a lot in your practice, it's a real common issue for people to have actually low stomach acid and not absorb these nutrients. You can have the perfect diet and just poop it out, and it's frustrating because you spend all this time and money to have a great diet, so getting it absorbed is hugely important. So one of the biggest things that shuts down digestion is stress. If you're on the go, eating in your car, eating while you're standing up, you know, just go, go, go all the time, your body is not caring about breaking down those foods and absorbing them. It's just trying to deal with life. So the more that you can relax, sit down, smell your food, chew your food, look at your food. Your digestion starts when you look at your food and smell it. It gets those juices flowing. That is going to really maximize the absorption of those nutrients in that meal. So that's first thing, sit down, relax, have a meal. If your life isn't set up in that way, you got to make some adjustments, because that's priority number one. So you got to, you know, put it around healthy meals and having time to actually sit down and eat your food. So that's number one. And then chewing. chewing until your food is a liquid. That's also hugely important. I mean, if you're having a bowel movement and you're seeing big, you know, pieces of corn, you're not chewing it. If you chew it completely, you're not going to see it in your stool. So chew completely until it's a liquid. There are some other things that can help to boost digestion absorption. So things like apple cider vinegar is great. So doing a spoonful of that with your meals. Also, you know, things like enzymes and betaine HCL if you need to step it up to something stronger. But generally, if you're eating in a relaxed state, you're chewing your food, adding in some vinegars with your meals, you're going to be doing the majority of the work of getting those things absorbed.
Great. And I love that you said look at your food, because at that you start to digest when you see it. You start to salivate when you see something lovely, and then your digestive juices are starting to be produced. And how beautiful is that? Instead of gulping it down, I remember going to a presentation Dr. Ben Lynch did, and he said, do you eat your food like a snake? You know, you just
right.
gulp it down whole. And when I actually ask my clients that, they say, maybe I do.
Oh, we all have been there.
Yeah.
We totally are. But, you know, yeah. And the whole experience is so much more fun when you sit down and enjoy your food. It's like the way that Europeans eat, you know, like the French. They take hours to eat their food, and they don't have a lot of the health problems we have. So we're doing something right.
We're eating too much on the go, so that's not a good thing. Great. Okay, let's talk about healthy fats now. You talked about protein and healthy fats to keep blood sugar stable. But why are fats so important when it comes to mood and hormonal health and everything else to make us feel good?
Yeah, well, I can usually tell when a patient sends over their diet plan if they're depressed or not, or if they're feeling anxious or not, based on what kind of foods they're having. If they're having a bunch of low-fat foods, you know, skim milk, egg whites, you know, vegetarian diet without those fats, I can pretty much guess they're going to feel anxious and depressed, because those healthy fats are going to just provide so much nutrition for your brain and your moods. I mean, our brains are 60% fat. So we are made literally fatheads walking around. We have cholesterol as the main component of our brains. So we know that low cholesterol, for example, is associated with homicidal behavior, suicidal behavior, aggression, depression. So, you know, and I know that that's kind of the typical way we think of this with conventional medicine, is that, the lowest amount of cholesterol is what we're going for. You know, doctors are putting patients on statins left and right, and people are avoiding fat like the plague. And I really think that so many of our mental health disorders are correlated with the lower amount of dietary fat. So having cholesterol more, you know, my goal is getting that about 150 to 200 with patients. I find that really does help with their mood. And, and also hormones, right? Hormones are made of cholesterol. So very, very important to have more dietary fats in your diet. And the kind of fat is very important, right? So we're not talking about getting your fries fried and, you know, trans fats. We're not talking about those kinds of fats. We're talking about things like unsaturated fats, like what's in fish or in olives. Avocado, we're talking about the fats that are in grass-fed red meat, those kinds of healthy saturated fats, coconut. So coconut has a really healthy saturated fat. Those are the kind of fats I'm talking about. And also, too, fats are very important to absorb certain nutrients. So we know of our fat-soluble vitamins and our water-soluble vitamins. Well, what that means with fat-soluble vitamins is that they are absorbed much better with fat. So, for example, vitamin A, if you're having, let's say you have a meal, beautiful, dark leafy greens, and you're putting in some carrots, maybe some like orange bell peppers, some of those bright, you know, yellow and orange colors, those are loaded with beta carotene. If you have that meal with just vinegar, the amount that you're going to be absorbing of those fat-soluble vitamins is much, much different than if you drizzle some olive oil on it and add some avocado. So those fats, they work in synergy with those fat-soluble nutrients to maximize absorption.
Great. Well, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because a lot of people are eating these fat-free dressings, and then they're not getting all the benefits from those beta-carotenes in their salad. So important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you're not full longer too, right? If you have a salad with just fat-free dressing, you're hungry, an hour later and reaching for a cookie. So the healthy fats also keep you full longer, and that really makes a huge difference with your mood too. So balancing that blood sugar again.
Mm-hmm. And then butter, I'm sure you're a proponent of butter.
I am a proponent of butter. I specifically really like ghee. Ghee is clarified butter, and it has just those really healthy saturated fats. And I found butter for so many patients really helped to balance their hormones. Like really adding in more of those saturated fats, it just makes such a big difference when we do retesting for the hormones, night and day. And who doesn't love butter, right? It's like a big hug. it's just comforting having some butter.
I love that, like a big hug. Yep. And then
I was going to say the CLA, so the conjugated linoleic acid is also higher in butter as well. So grass-fed butter specifically. So you're having that. And also vitamin A. We know there's higher levels of vitamin A in grass-fed butter. So quality is really very important. I'm not talking about the little butter packets you get from Denny's. You know, I'm talking about the grass-fed butter, things like Kerrygold butter, and also like grass-fed ghee. That's what we're talking about.
Great. And tell us a little bit about why someone might pick ghee versus butter.
So the difference between the two is that it's ghee is clarified butter, so it's actually removed so there's no casein in ghee. There's also no lactose in ghee. So for many people who have dairy sensitivities, we find that they don't have any issues with ghee. So it's a lot less allergenic than some of the other dairy sources. So for people who tend to get kind of that mucusy feeling when they're having dairy, we find oftentimes they don't have that problem with ghee.
Okay, great. And then the other thing I was going to ask you about was we talked about the whole cholesterol thing, because I'm really glad you mentioned that low cholesterol is being too problematic. And I'll see a lot of people with really low cholesterol, you know, below the 150 range. And as you say, they have hormonal issues. And once we get their fat consumption up and making sure that they're absorbing those fats, then they've got the raw materials to make their hormones, and PMS can go away, and other hormonal issues can resolve. And you see that's what you were saying you see as well, correct?
Absolutely. I really do see that. When I have a patient come in who has a cholesterol of like 130, I'm more concerned than someone who comes in with a cholesterol of 230.
Yeah.
Like really, it's a difference in how they feel. Their mood is different. Oftentimes they're having skin issues, irregular periods. You know, you name it. There's just a lot more problems that I see clinically than someone with you know, quote unquote high cholesterol. I mean, we know that there is cultures all around the world. A lot of the work that like Chris Masterjohn has done, he's done a lot of research into cholesterol. He's, you know, so smart when it comes to this topic. You know, there's cultures all around the world that have zero heart disease, zero cancer, zero diabetes, and their cholesterol is in the 230s and 240s. So it's really not about the number. It's about looking at the big picture. Is there inflammation in the body? You know, what kinds of quality of the foods are you eating? You know, is there other markers of heart disease and stroke risk in the blood work, things like that? So it's really, you can't villainize the cholesterol.
Yeah, it's not just one marker that we want to look at. And we're now seeing that a lot of women in menopause have higher levels as well. And there's no research to show that higher cholesterol when you get into total cholesterol when you get into menopause is actually correlated with heart disease, correct?
Right, absolutely. And you know, people say, oh, well, statins work, right? They lower cholesterol and they lower heart disease risk. Well, the thing is statins are anti-inflammatory. So you can't just say that statins work because they lower cholesterol, so therefore they reduce heart disease. They reduce inflammation. And we know inflammation is that silent killer that contributes to all those diseases we just talked about. So the more you can reduce inflammation, that is going to reduce the buildup of plaque formation, stroke risk, heart disease. That's really the culprit is the inflammation. So having an anti-inflammatory lifestyle, some of these anti-inflammatory fats, that is going to be so much more protective than getting your cholesterol as low as possible.
Great. And I'd like to take a little bit more of a dive into cholesterol, just because I know it's a hot topic. Whenever I'm out speaking, I always get questions about it, and I'm sure there's people listening who want to know. If someone does, you know, we've said that, you know, you don't really need to worry about, you know, levels if they're too high. We need to look at some of these other markers. So someone comes in to see you and they've got cholesterol maybe 260, total cholesterol 260. Mm-hmm. What would you would run some other tests. Can you just talk about some of the other tests that you might run to rule out the possibility that there might be some concerns about heart disease?
Absolutely. So there's a few other tests that I would run in addition to that. So one of them is looking at other markers of cholesterol. So triglycerides would be an important one to look at. I like to see triglycerides below 100. If you have triglycerides that are too high, that's a clue that there's insulin resistance. So the reason that that's connected is because if you have higher levels of glucose, which is the sugar in the blood, and it's more than what the body can store in the liver, it's going to turn that into triglycerides, and that can contribute to fatty liver. So that is a marker of that would be more of a clue that there's some inflammation and insulin resistance. So triglycerides is one of them. The other one would be looking at homocysteine. So homocysteine is a marker of heart disease and stroke risk. And ideally, we want to see that below a 7. Cardiologists like to see it below a 15, but I think that's way too high. So we know that there are some nutrients that can help to lower homocysteine, specifically some of those B vitamins that we just mentioned earlier. So B12 is one that can lower homocysteine, and also B6 and folic acid. So if let's say I have a patient come in, they have, you know, high total cholesterol, they have high triglycerides, they have high homocysteine, maybe high CRP. So CRP is a marker of inflammation. So I like to see CRP below 1. If it's over that, then I'm going to look and see, okay, what could be contributing to inflammation for this patient? So let's say we have a patient, cholesterol of 260. All of those other markers are looking great. I wouldn't be nearly as concerned as someone who comes in with a cholesterol of 260. Maybe their triglycerides are, you know, 150. Their CRP is like a 5. Their homocysteine is like a 9. So those numbers are much higher. Then I'm going to, you know, take a step back and look at, okay, what's causing this inflammation? Let's let's get our cells more sensitive to insulin. So work on diet, maybe cutting out the excess carbs. Let's look on, you know, getting more of those B vitamin levels higher, the B12 and the folate. And then looking at other sources of inflammation. So it's really is looking at the whole picture.
Great. And all these markers you've talked about have a direct correlation to anxiety and depression, because if we've got low B12 or B6 or folate, then we're going to possibly be more anxious or depressed. And we're seeing this very strong correlation between elevated CRP, this marker of inflammation, and mood problems. So all of these are very closely tied to mood as well as overall health.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. Absolutely. And so for a lot of my patients, I'm not even treating the mood specifically, right? Mm-hmm. We're getting some of these nutrient deficiencies addressed and reducing inflammation, and then all of a sudden, by the way, my anxiety's gone.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling so sad. Yeah.
Exactly. We're getting people healthy, and the great benefits are these, you feel great, or you lose some weight, or you become your ideal weight, or whatever it is. Those are just the side benefits of addressing some of these nutritional deficiencies and eating a healthy diet.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. And then one more comment about the whole cholesterol discussion, and that was you may also do further testing, like a VAP test, to look at particle sizes as well.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So you know your stuff, girl. So yes, you can do some extra testing looking at, okay, so this LDL that's elevated, right, this is quote-unquote the bad cholesterol, which is not totally true, because if you didn't have LDL, you wouldn't be alive. So you need LDL, but you need it in a healthy level. So let's say you have LDL that's elevated. Okay, well, let's look and see. Do you have the big puffy clouds that bounce around and don't cause any problems, or do you have the small, dense LDL that are like little bullets that get into the lining of the blood vessels? So you can do testing to look and see what's the particle size, particle number, and also looking at things like inflammation, like we said, and kind of see a full picture of that. So VAP panel is one. You can do NMR testing. We use specialty lab testing through Boston Heart Labs. There's other ones like Cleveland Heart Labs, Berkeley Heart Labs. So, you know, most functional doctors, naturopathic doctors, will run from these specialty clinics. They get kind of a full, you know, cardiovascular workup.
Great. Okay. We got a little bit detoured there, but I think it's an important one, and it hasn't come up in any of the other interviews. So thank you for going a little bit off track.
Yeah, I'm all about it.
Good. And then just related to the fats, obviously we've talked about the healthy fats, but we want to avoid the trans fats. And we've seen a lot of studies that have shown that a high consumption of trans fats are linked to an increased risk of depression. And there was actually a study in 2013 showing this chronic consumption of trans fats can enhance emotionality and anxiety parameters. So we obviously want to be avoiding the bad guys, the bad fats.
Right, for sure. So cutting out the fried foods, margarine, get it out of the house. Don't ever use margarine ever again. You know, use real foods like butter, like ghee, and you're not going to be getting those nasty trans fats.
Excellent. And all the processed foods are going to contain trans fats as well, so we want to avoid those. So that goes without saying.
Yep.
Okay, now another really nutrient-dense thing that we can include into our diet are bone broths. Can you talk a little bit about why these might be beneficial.
Sure. We've been using bone broths in human species really for thousands of years. And, you know, even like Hippocrates, they you can see old writings about them using, broth for healing. And a lot of energy goes into digestion on a regular basis. So a lot of the body's resources, it goes into digesting. So taking some time to let the digestion take a break is really a good idea. Bone broth is very easy to digest, and it's loaded with many nutrients that can help with mood. So it's easy to make. You can make it, maybe once a week or even once a month and freeze it for the month. And having just a little bit every day is just giving your gut so much of the healing nutrients for healing leaky gut, giving you some of the minerals and fats for your mood. One in particular, and I know you love GABA, I love GABA, one of the nutrients to make GABA is glycine. So glycine is in a higher amount in bone broth, so it can also help with mood for that reason. So if you're doing bone broth every day, it can really help with anxiety. Let's say you get frequent injuries, muscle or soft tissue injuries or ligament laxity. If you find yourself spraining your ankle or not healing very well from injuries, bone broth can be a great thing to add into your diet so that it can help with healing. It has gelatin, there's collagen, these different nutrients that come from the bones, just a great kind of mix of nutrients to help with the healing.
Wonderful. So a lot of people will say, oh, I remember my granny making bone broth, or
right.
I remember my mom having it on the stove. If someone remembers it, but they can't think, well, where do I start? What would be a good tip on how to make a bone broth?
It's so easy. So you can start with the stock pot. You can get a slow cooker. And you just need a few ingredients. So you want to get a whole free-range chicken, so maybe 2 or 3 pounds of a chicken. And you want to get the bony chicken parts, like the neck, the back, the breastbones, the wings, even the feet. You can make it with chicken feet, which kind of grosses people out, but that's actually one of the best things to get the real gelatinous kind of consistency. So you want to fill up the pot with some water. You want to add some vinegar. So you can add about 2 tablespoons of vinegar. And then you want to add a bunch of different vegetables. You want to add in a large onion, so you want to coarsely chop that up. You can add in a couple carrots, so you can peel and chop them up, and then 3 celery stalks. And then you're going to add that to the water. Then you want to place the whole chicken or the chicken carcass into the pot. So you just bring that to a boil, and then as it's boiling, some things will rise to the top, so you want to just remove any kind of scum that comes up to the top. And then you want to reduce the heat to low, and you want to let it simmer. So if you're cooking a whole chicken, the meat will start to separate from the bones after a couple hours. You just want to remove the chicken from the pot and separate the meat from the bones. And then you'll place the carcass back into the pot, and then you keep simmering it for about 12 to 24 hours. If you're cooking only the bones, you just want to let that simmer for about 24 hours. And then you can also add in parsley, actually, at the end of cooking it. So about 10 minutes before you're done with the stock, you can add the parsley into it. So just a few handfuls of that, a bunch of that. And that adds some good minerals into the broth. And then just you want to pull the bones from the broth when you're done just to strain it. And then what you have left is just a nutrient-rich broth that is just delicious. It's loaded with things, like I said, like glycine, other amino acids like proline and arginine, so that, anti-inflammatory effects. And it's just amazing. There's magnesium, there's some calcium in there, other minerals like phosphorus and silicone and sulfur. So it's great. It's just amazing. I can't rave enough about bone broth. And it's great for your skin and your hair and your nails. So, some of the ladies, their ears perk up when you say that. It's like, okay, anti-aging? Okay, I'll do it.
Great. So just to clarify, for someone who may not know, you could put a whole chicken in there and then just take the chicken flesh off and then use that. Or if you've made a roast chicken, for example, you could use the carcass and then put that in and then just cook up your broth with that.
Exactly. Yeah, if you go to Whole Foods and get one of those whole chickens and you eat the meat off of it, don't throw that carcass out. You can put that into the pot and make that into bone broth.
Excellent. And then once you've made this broth, then you can freeze it and use it and drink it, or you can use it to maybe cook some grains if you're going to be eating grains, or use it in other ways.
I've had one patient, she doesn't particularly like the taste of bone broth, so she actually made it into ice cubes, and then she would add that to her smoothies in the morning, and she didn't even taste it. So it was just a kind of a mineral-rich ice cube that she put into her smoothies. So I thought that was really creative.
Oh, that's a very good idea. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Why not, right?
Yes, why not? Okay, I love it. And then you could do the same with some kind of grass-fed meat bone, and you probably want to use a slow cooker because that's going to take quite a long time to do with a lamb or a beef bone.
Right, exactly. You can do any kind of bone like that. Yep, that one's specifically for chicken, and there's loads of videos on YouTube. Just Google how to make bone broth; you'll find tons of them on there. So
yeah. And I believe Sally Fallon's just come out with a new book on bone broth. I haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
No, I haven't seen it yet. That's great. So it's a bunch of different bone broth recipes?
Yes, and the history and some of the health benefits. And for people who don't know about Sally Fallon, she's president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, and they've got a lot of information about bone broths on their site. And she's got a great book called Nourishing Traditions, which has information about bone broths. But now she's come out with a book specifically on bone broth. So
oh,
I look
cool.
forward to checking it out. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, too, that I forgot to mention, too, that chicken also contains some cysteine, right? So that can help to thin the mucus in your lungs. So if you find, especially this is around cold and flu season, if you find you're getting just some buildup of that, colds, flus, coughing and feeling stuffy, then that can be helpful to thin the mucus as well. So a nice little added benefit.
Yes, chicken soup does help.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good. And you're making it into a broth. You're getting all these other beautiful nutrients that you've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So what other nutrient-dense foods do we need to think about as part of this primal nutrition for mood?
Yeah, so let's see. We talked about some of the seafoods like oysters. We talked about the grass-fed meats. If you eat eggs, eat the yolk, please, because that's loaded with some of those, nutrients like choline and beta-carotene, some of those healthy fats, saturated fats. I actually really love pumpkin seeds. Pumpkin seeds are a good source of magnesium and zinc. So for someone who there's no way that they're going to do oysters, that would be a nice alternative is pumpkin seeds. The dark leafy greens, we can't get away from those. I know we try to sometimes, but I personally love greens, but you can't get away from greens. They're just loaded with things like folate. I don't think we talked about methylation issues, which is, hugely important for mental health. I'm sure you guys have talked about that on your other show, but getting a food source of methylfolate is in the dark leafy greens. So, spinach, chard, kale, it's like the most healthy thing you can have, really, besides liver. That's another one is liver.
We didn't talk about liver. Let's talk,
we didn't
about,
talk about liver.
About liver.
Yeah, so B vitamins, iron, zinc, vitamin A. Liver is literally nature's multivitamin.
I love it. It's so funny, when I go and do my presentations, I'll have people in the audience raise their hand if you ate liver as a kid. And most of the audience, maybe 80 to 90%, will raise their hand. And I'll say, okay, raise your hand if you are eating liver now. And most audiences will be maybe 10%, maybe 20%, depending on the audience. If I go to a conference with a whole bunch of nutritionists or naturopaths, then it'll be a bigger audience. But I think it's really important to realize that our moms and grannies did know best when it came to a lot of the food recommendations that they made, and we need to go back to the basics. And liver is one of those. So if someone is saying, "Ew, I don't know if I could eat liver," what would you recommend as a way to maybe make liver a little bit more palatable?
Yeah, well, I know our friend Chris Kresser, he's come up with some cool tips. I know he's mentioned cutting the liver up into small little pieces, kind of like little capsule size, and freezing it for 2 weeks. So you can lay them out on a cookie sheet and freeze that for 2 weeks, and then just take them like capsules. So just take a couple per day. That's one way to do it. So if you don't want to actually taste liver, I know my friend Magdalena, she's come up with a really good recipe over on, gosh, what is her website?
Has to be hormones for healing. Magdalena?
Yeah. So she has a good chicken liver recipe that apparently people rave about it, even who hate liver. So that's another idea. You can make meatballs and just put some liver in that and use the rest, maybe some ground beef or, lamb or whatever, turkey. So just do, I call that stealth health, it's kind of hidden little healing things in there. If maybe you have kids and you want to have them eat some liver and them not know it, you can just put a little bit of some liver into the meatballs. So there's ways you can get it in there if you don't really like the taste, because it's kind of an acquired taste, we'll say.
Yeah, you're right. And I love the idea of stealth health. That's a great way. Sneak it in. And even if you're sneaking it in for yourself, not for your kids, you're going to get those benefits.
Right.
And it's interesting that you talk about, what I'll do is I'll find Magdalena's recipe and share it on the blog so folks can see it. And, you know, I grew up in South Africa, and just about every single restaurant that you go to in South Africa, on the starter menu, they'll have chicken livers. It's a very common thing to have, and they call them peri-peri chicken livers, so they're a little bit spicy. And just, you know, people are used to having it. So I think, as you say, it's a bit of an acquired taste, and if you can spice it up and make it interesting, you're going to find it a lot more palatable. I like a liver pate is often quite palatable, and US Wellness Meats actually has a very nice liverwurst that they have a liver in there, and they'll sometimes have some other organ meats. So you're ending up getting like a sort of a summer sausage type of thing that's got all the organ meats in it, which is often palatable and handy because you can have it in the fridge and just slice off pieces as you go.
Yum. US Wellness Meats, I love what they're doing. They have these delicious, and it's off topic, they have these delicious ribs that are already cooked, and you just put them in your oven and just heat them up, and they just literally fall off the bone. They're so good. I love US Wellness Meats. Really good quality stuff. Perfect example for someone who can't find good quality meat near them, so no excuse.
good point. Good quality, and you can get it shipped right to your door. So this is great. I wanted to go back to one thing you said, and that was pumpkin seeds, because that's one of my absolute favorite too. And there's actually research looking at a functional food. I think I mentioned it in my interview, looking at a functional food made from pumpkin seeds, and they found that it helped with insomnia and actually helped with social anxiety too. So we're getting the zinc, as you mentioned, and then there's some tryptophan in there as well. And it's got all the, you know, healthy fats. So I just think pumpkin seeds are absolutely fabulous.
Totally agree. And pumpkin seeds is actually, it can be a treatment for parasites too. Just a handful of pumpkin seeds every day for 2 weeks. You can actually get rid of parasites with that. So very healing food, and it's very powerful.
Great. And I've got a lovely recipe I'll share. I like to soak them overnight so they're starting to sprout, and then cook them with a little bit of olive oil, sea salt, turmeric, and ginger. And it's roast them, and then they're just yummy.
Yum. Well, it's the right time to have pumpkin seeds with the Thanksgiving, so
it certainly is. Well, this has been so fantastic. I'm so glad we talked so much about food. I can hear the excitement in your voice, and I'm excited too. We need to be enjoying our food and getting all this mineral-rich, nutrient-dense food so we can, you know, go back to our basics and not forget about all the foundational things that are going to make such a big difference. So I'm really, really thrilled that you've shared this information. Any other things that we want to talk about food? Because I do want to just share that you've got these great interviews on Dr. Low Radio, and we'll share a link to some of them. You'd interviewed the author of Death by Food Pyramid, which I thought would be a good one to share. Was that a good interview?
That was, yeah. Denise Minger. She is a little firecracker. She's so smart. Wrote a really good book on this kind of the food guide pyramid and debunking a lot of myths. And that was a great show. I liked that one a lot.
Okay, we'll share that one too. And I need to go and listen to it. That's one I haven't listened to. And then you mentioned Chris Kresser, and we'll share the interview that you did with him, your personal paleo code, which I think was fantastic. So this way, folks will be able to come to your Blog Talk Radio, Dr. Low Show, and see what you're doing over there. That'll be great.
Yeah. One of the things I want to say that popped up in my head is I think one of the best ways that food can treat anxiety and depression is because it has us connect with each other. You know, I mean, food is a way for us to build community. We all cook together and sit down and eat together. And so much in our culture, we're so separated from each other. So, you know, as you guys are listening to this, have fun cooking in the kitchen, but find this as a way for you to connect with other people. Have some friends over. Have a dinner party. You know, I mean, we are tribal creatures, and so we're meant to connect with each other, and food is a great way to do that. So we know that connectedness, right, being connected with other people is if you're not connected, it's higher risk for things like early death compared to even things like cigarette smoking and drinking. So being connected with each other is hugely important for you know, for your mood. And so use food as an excuse to do that. So I just encourage you guys to not get that tunnel vision, like I need, you know, pumpkin seeds for zinc, but okay, how can I incorporate these foods and connect with people in my community? So
I love it.
Just a little reminder
it.
of what it's all about.
That's good. And that was perfect because I ask all the speakers any final words of wisdom, and you gave me your final words of wisdom before I even asked you.
That's my final word of wisdom. Connect with each other, especially during the holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas. Find a way to really, you know, put your phone down, your computer down, and connect and have healthy food together.
I love it. And then as well as the connecting is sitting down with family, because too many families are rushing all over the show and not sitting down to family meals. So part of that connecting as well as with friends can be, you know, just with the family. Sit down and have a family meal. I think it's really important.
Yes, yes.
Great. Well, Dr. Lowe, thank you so much. We're going to share a link to your website, drlaurennoel.com, so folks can sign up for your newsletter and stay connected with you, because I'm sure they are going to want to learn more from you. It's been wonderful having you. I appreciate you for this interview and then for having interviewed me on my amino acid talk. And thank you so much. And anything else to add, or are we ready to
No, that's great. Thank you so much for having me, you guys. And so I just wish you all happiness and look forward to doing more with you together, Trudy.
Great. Thanks, Dr. Lowe.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.